set for all the action. It's Vancouver Canucks game day on the official home of the Canucks. Sportsnet 650 and the Sportsnet Radio Network. Here's Dan Riccio, Satyar Shah, and Randeep Chanda.
Yes, that music you hear means it's coming up. Puck drop, Canucks and Oilers, 2 hours from now in Edmonton as the Canucks begin their 2021-2022 campaign. And it is the People's Show / the Canucks pregame show. And kicking off this hour, our exclusive interview with Canucks chairman of Canucks Sports and Entertainment, Francesco Aquilini. How's it going, Frank?
Good. How are you guys doing?
We're doing well. It's good. You came into studio, you immediately mentioned Dud Soda. So Randeep is like smiling ear to ear right now. He could not be happier.
Yeah. Word is growing about Dud Soda.
I know. It's getting traction there.
There we go. Okay, things are working.
We have to brand it.
Yeah, you're hearing about it everywhere. Dud Soda. It's sweeping Vancouver as we know it. Yeah.
And he didn't have a negative reaction to you italicizing the name.
I mean, it's just what we do here on the People's Show.
But you got to pronounce it right, Dud.
Right? Yes.
You have to do it right.
Yes.
There we go.
That I got to do better. Yeah. Okay. It is the People's Show. So, Francesco, it's your 15th year. You've been the owner of the Canucks now. How has the process been for you? What have you learned in your time steering this ship?
Mm-hmm. It's been quite a journey. Growing up a Canucks fan in my whole life, growing up an East fan, it's been quite something. And being an owner, it's a privilege, I talked to some of the other owners, and what they say is, you're just holding it for the next guy, because the Canucks will be here 100 years from now, but what I've learned is, the passion of the fans, in Vancouver. I mean, I travel, all over the, all of the other NHL arenas, and, I come back home, and I really see how passionate our fans are. I mean, they're so engaged, they're so involved, they're educated, they understand. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's just amazing. I mean, ever since, as a little kid, you want to win the Stanley Cup. So I'm never going to be content until I, really reward the fans, their passion with the Stanley Cup. I'm not going to be happy until that happens.
Well, and you know how passionate they are and how hot that passion runs sometimes. So how do you feel about this team heading into this year that can maybe, get people believing in them again?
Yeah, I'm optimistic. I feel good about it. I mean, if you look at this team, what it takes to be successful. I mean, it's a group of people that come together. I mean, that's what it is. And we have such a young core that's so, very talented, and, Jim adding to the roster, bolstering up, with some players, and that general feeling of optimism. I sense it, that sense of optimism in the dressing room with the guys. And, I feel good about it. I feel very optimistic. I think this team is more indicative of what we saw in the bubble as opposed to what happened last year. I mean, last year was a real disappointment. And, that's kind of what I see. I think we're really the team that's going to continue on from what was achieved in the bubble.
Yeah. Well, you talked about fans and how central they are to the team, of course, the identity of the organization. When will Rogers Arena come back to full capacity? Do you have any sense of that right now?
Well, right now we're 50%, and we're the only arena in North America to have, not full capacity, which is odd. And, you can question that. And, I'd like to see 100%, obviously, but that's going to be up to the provincial health officer to decide that. But, my understanding is there's some indication that will be, changed by the time we have our opening game. And I think that eventually it's going to get there, because we're the only team. So I think by default, we'll have to get there.
Francesco Aquilini joining us here on the People's Show. Last year, a lot happened, but managing the team through the pandemic, how challenging was that?
Oh, it was, you can't imagine how tough it was in so many fronts, right? From the player perspective, from, not having fans in the building, You know, like we were just in survival mode. I mean, the way it started, you know, there was no training camp. I mean, we had this rocky start. You know, we had all these new players there. You know, they didn't kind of quite gel, you know, right away. And, you know, a lot of these players underperformed. I mean, you know, they could do a lot better. Those first 15 games was pretty scary. Mm-hmm. And, you know, everybody knew they were better than that. And so it took them a while to get going. And then, you know, and then COVID hit, you know, and then, you know, Elias Pettersson got injured. You know, so many things kind of all happened. And it was just such a disappointment. I mean, it was really... You know, I think it was an anomaly. I mean, I like to think that. I like to believe that it's just like it was like a one-off bad year. And, you know, so now we're just going to look to the future.
And it was a tough year for everybody involved. I mean, yourself as an owner as well, because we were dealing with the pandemic, and economically that has an impact. So how did it force you perhaps operate differently? Because you can't have everybody employed through a pandemic like that. So how much did that affect you budget-wise from a normal year?
Yeah, I mean, it was incredibly. It was really tough. I mean... you know, there was no fans in the building. You know, it was empty. And, you know, we had to lay off people, and, you know, people had, you know, the families and mortgages to pay. And, you know, it was really difficult. And that was probably the, you know, in my business career, you know, been in business 40 years, that was probably the toughest year I ever had to deal with, you know, from the COVID protocols, from the health issues, from laying people off and dealing with revenue challenges. I mean, you know, we as a league decided that we're going to play. The NHL is going to play regardless, even if there's no fans. And so that, you know, that costed us a lot of money. We lost a lot of money. But, you know, we wanted to play. We wanted to keep, you know, keep everything going. And so we did the best we could. And, you know, we went down to a very small group of employees of management. And, you know, they did a hell of a job. I mean, those guys worked so hard, given what we had to deal with, but it was probably the toughest year in business I ever had to deal with.
You're listening to Sportsnet 650. We're joined by Canucks owner Francesco Aquilini. And Francesco, I know there's a lot of fans, and we'd like to know the answer to this as well.
Yeah.
This team under Jim Benning has made the playoffs two times.
Mm-hmm.
What's behind all the faith in this management group for you?
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, you know, Jim has a vision, and you know, Jim has a vision how to build this team, and so we, you know, I want to follow through with that. And you know, these things take time. I mean, it's not something that you can cut corners, you know, or shortcuts. You know, you can, you know, build a team through free agents. I mean, it just doesn't work. I mean, and so what we've done is, you know, we've kind of drafted a lot of these young players, and now they're starting to come into their own, and you know, now we've got them under contract, and you know, all these guys we have are at the right age, and so now, I mean, now is the point where I think, you know, we have to take the next step. I mean, you know, Jim has, you know, bolstered the lineup, like I was saying. You know, now is the time to take the next step to move forward. But like, you know, like I said before, I think this is more of a team that we saw in the bubble than what we saw last year. You know, so
it you could tell the speculation was reaching pretty high levels about the management's future during last season, as things started to fall apart early on. Why did you feel it was necessary to go out publicly on Twitter and say that this management group is here for the foreseeable future?
Hey, listen, I mean, look, I mean, I can understand the passion of the fans. Like, I really believe that, you know, but... You know, like, you know, dissing people because, you know, you're just second guessing every decision they make. You know, I don't agree with that. So, you know, that's why, you know, I went on Twitter and, you know, and back Jim, because I mean, things take their time. And I think now we've reached the point where, you know, we're going to see some results. So right now I'm backing Jim. And if you're going to diss anybody, you know, diss me, you know. I mean, Jim is doing his job. And, you know, these are very difficult circumstances. I mean, this is not easy. You know, you have to wait for right opportunities. I mean, you know, making player trades, drafting, all those things that happen, signing players. It's a very complicated. It's a very fluid moving target. And, you know, I listen, Jim and his management team are working hard. They're working hard, and they're putting the, you know, the best team they can on the ice, you know, so.
You mentioned that people shouldn't diss Jim, but diss you instead. Did you feel somewhat responsible then for some of the failures of last year? Because you're all grouped together. Is that why, to some degree?
I mean, you know, everybody has to take responsibility. Mm-hmm. I mean, ultimately, it's the players playing on the ice and then the coaches and management and me. But I think as a group, I'm not playing, so I can't really, you know. But, I mean, in terms of supporting Jim, mm-hmm. I mean, I can take that responsibility, you know.
Looking back at last year and the disappointments that, you know, occurred, obviously it got pretty nasty at times. And, mm-hmm. you know, I'm not going to surprise anybody by mentioning the Fire Jim banner that was flown across the city. Mm-hmm. When that happens, what are you feeling?
You know, I mean, you know, I think that's like a cheap shot. I think it's no class. I think that, you know, people who do that, you know, they got too much time on their hands. You know, but at the same time, you know, he has a family. I mean, you know, how do you want to, you know, would you want to see your husband or your father, you know, getting hung out like that? I mean, it's just low budget, no class. That's what I think.
It is part of it comes back to the passion of the fan base, right? Mm-hmm. And maybe not getting to be at Rogers Arena last year and expressing some of those displeasures with how things were going plays a factor into that. But, you know, it was a tough year. And how do you feel it kind of affected the organization from an outside perspective?
Yeah, I mean, listen, I was, you know, very disappointed. I mean, just as much as everybody else. Mm-hmm. But you have to take everything in context, like I was saying, about what happened and, you know, the injuries, the COVID, this, that. There's so many things. Everything that could go wrong went wrong.
Right.
You know, and so last year we were kind of in survival mode. I mean, we got hit, you know, COVID, I think that we got most affected by any sports team in North America. I mean, that's crazy to think that half of our team was out with COVID for 2 weeks. And it's insane. I can't even imagine. So, I mean, to expect them, you know, to come back, and it was hard. I mean, and we didn't get the success we wanted, but you know, now that's behind us, and I think we, this team is more indicative of a team that's in the bubble. That's what I think.
Francesco Aquilini is our guest here on the People Show on Sportsnet 650, and you kind of mentioned Jim's vision and trying to see that through, and you made a couple of additions, big time additions to the front office this offseason, Henrik and Daniel Sedin. How do they fit in with your long term vision and how you see them being part of the organization moving forward?
Yeah, so Daniel, you know, they're fantastic people. I mean, I've known them forever, and they're just first class. And so when they retired, you know, I went up to them and I said, look, would you guys want to be part of the organization? And they said, no, you know, we do, but not right now. And they wanted to spend some time with their families, you know, spend a little time away from the game. And then I kind of always knew they wanted to come back because they live here. Like, I mean, they're in the community, they're entrenched. They love the team. They've been part of the team. They've been, you know, how many, 19, 20 years they've been here. And so, you know, when they were ready, I knew they were going to come back. And so they approached me and they said, look, we want to come back. We're ready. And I thought that was fantastic. I thought that was great. So now they're just kind of, you know, getting their feet wet. We're just trying to figure out, you know, where they're going to fit in and how they're going to help. But, you know, it's amazing. We're so lucky to have them. I mean, they're just great people. That's the start, you know, in any organization. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. It always starts with having great people.
Absolutely. You're listening to Sportsnet 650. We're joined by Francesco Aquilini. Francesco, 10 years ago, this organization obviously almost reached the top of the mountain by going to the Stanley Cup Final, Game 7, mm-hmm. and was known as one of the most cutting edge mm-hmm. in sports. Forget hockey, but mm-hmm. sports. How do you get back to that point, and how do you get back to the Stanley Cup Final?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, that's the million-dollar question, right? That's the one. So, I mean, everything has to align. I mean, it starts with the players, having the right group of players, you know, with the right experience, comes with, you know, the coaching and management, you know, the alignment throughout the whole organization. And then ultimately, it comes to chemistry, right, when the guys come together, right? And, you know, that's always the magic trick. That's the magic dust is the chemistry. And, you know, I talked to, you know, other coaches and other, you know, other sports leagues and soccer and football, and I ask them the question, you know, what does it take to win? And they all say the same thing. You know, they always say it's chemistry. It's the end of the day is how do the guys come together? And so that's an ongoing thing. And so, you know, I always like there's that saying that, you know, it's not the players with the best team, but it's, you know, it's not the team with the best players, but the players with the best team. You know, it's about that, you know, coming together and believing in something. And I think that with this group, I mean, you know, they're all, you know, pretty close, and you know, we've got a bunch of good guys, and you know, we're gonna, you know, like, hope they do it. I mean, it's up to the players ultimately at the end of the day, you know.
But your ambition is the same that it was back in 2011?
Oh, absolutely. You know, at back then there was, you know, we hired some sports scientists. We had some stuff going on, and some of it worked, some of it didn't work, and we learned a lot from that. And all the good things that were found helpful in that time frame, we've kept. And some of the things that didn't work, we kind of eliminated. And we got a lot of feedback from the players, what they thought, and what they thought was helpful, was useful. And so that kind of continued.
Francesco Aquilini, our guest here on the People's Show, Canucks and Oilers, starting the season tonight in Edmonton. You'll hear at 7 o'clock here on Sportsnet 650. Is there an update on Jake Virtanen and the investigation?
You know, I know there's a, you know, he's under still an investigation, and you know, I haven't heard anything. You know, it's I think there's and there's a lawsuit going on, I think. So I really don't know much about that, other than that, you know, it's continuing. This investigation is ongoing.
Is it the police department doing that?
I think there's still an investigation going on. I believe so.
Looking ahead to this season, and we talked about the ambition of the organization, we talked a lot about last year and what the shortcomings were, but expectations for Francesco Aquilini for this year, what are they?
Expectations for me?
For the organization.
Oh, for the organization.
For the team. What do you want to see?
Oh, you know, we'll get to your expectations.
Yourself.
If you have personal ones, you can let us know.
Yeah, we can have an introspective chat right. here too, Francesco.
Okay. So, I tell you something, you know, I'd be really, really disappointed if we didn't make the playoffs, right? I mean, I'd be really disappointed. You know, so given that, I mean, we got a good group, you know, I mean, hopefully these guys can come together and you know, we'll see what this group can do together, you know.
When it comes to Elias Pettersson and Quinn Hughes, the negotiations just wrapped up and they got a couple of preseason games in. Do you mentioned you're a fan, you know, as much as anybody else. You know, how much of a part do you play in that, or is that on the management group to get that done and ready for the regular season?
I don't have a very big part in that at all. So, I mean, you know, Jim does all the negotiations, and, you know, that goes back and forth with the agent. There's a lot of factors to consider, you know, the salary cap, you know, the comparables, you know, there's so many factors. And, you know, Jim and his team, they look at that. And then, you know, he comes up and recommends this is what we should do. And, you know, I say yes, you know. I think that, you know, from an owner, you know, we write the checks and we rely on, you know, Jim's expertise. And, you know, I question him and, you know, I ask him questions and say, what about this? Have you thought about this? Have you thought about that? And, you know, Jim is, you know, pretty very well prepared. And so, you know, by the time that comes where he makes recommendations, it's just like it's all thought through, you know, comparables, you know, like the salary cap issues, what's going to happen next year, the year after that, like all the analysis is done. So Jim presents the whole analysis to me and I look at it and, you know, if all the work is done, then I'm good with it, you know.
And how much has that relationship kind of evolved over time and how much improvement? Because, you know, obviously Jim's still here and you believe in the vision. Mm-hmm. So how much has that evolved over time and how much improvement have you seen from him in that regard?
Yeah. So, I mean, you know, Jim, I mean, you know, we've worked together for a number of years and he makes his presentation and makes his case, what he wants to do, who he wants to, you know, he wants to sign, he wants to draft, all that kind of stuff. And so, listen, you know, it's not going to be 100% every time, you know, some, you know, he's going to make some good decisions and some decisions that are not good, just like in anything else in life. And I deal with that every day. So I understand that, you know, not every decision you make is going to be perfect. And as long as you make more better decisions than wrong decisions, like that's really the key. You got to make more right decisions than wrong decisions.
Well, one of the decisions you made this offseason was to move the AHL team from Utica to Abbotsford. Why was now the right time to do that?
Yeah, it was all the stars aligned. It was a perfect opportunity. You know, the city of Abbotsford wanted it. You know, the Utica contract came up. And, you know, Jim had a big part in that. He said, look, you know, we'd love to have the team in Abbotsford because, you know, having our players there, we can keep them close. You know, Jim can go and scout them. You know, having this, you know, Daniel and Henrik here, they said they, you know, they wanted to go and see the games and stay in touch with the younger players and see them along developing. So I thought that'd be great. So, and then the city of Abbotsford were fantastic. We negotiated a deal with them that was, you know, very comparable to the Utica deal. So, you know, we were excited. And, you know, our guys, they pulled it out. The management team pulled it together in a very short period of time, right? Like it was only 3-4 months to put this whole thing together. And, you know, they did a great job.
How was that process, building a professional hockey team from scratch?
Yeah, it was amazing. These guys, I mean, we hired are, you know, top-notch guys. I mean, they're all experienced. I mean, you know, very dedicated, devoted, and, you know, we've got a great team. And, it was exciting to see it all come together. And, you know, the city of Abbotsford and the Fraser Valley, you know, the fan base there have been incredible, right? Just incredible support. Like, everybody's been behind us. Anything we needed, they were there to help us, you know, so that was a big part of it. You know?
And how has that been a part of your vision for a while to kind of be able to have the farm team in your own backyard? Because for a while it was the Calgary Flames who were in Abbotsford. Did you have this vision for a long time about being able to unite both teams in the same market?
Yeah, absolutely. And we were in Utica and we had a contract there and it was, we couldn't move. And so when the contract was about to expire, I think we were there for 3-4 years. You know, when Abbotsford, we kept talking Abbotsford, you know, and so we thought, you know, it's a perfect distance from the city. You know, we've got a great fan base. It's a great building. And, you know, and it allows our hockey operations people to stay in touch with our, you know, with our developing young players. So we got some young players that are there. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they can stay in touch with it, get to be close to them. And, you know, the call-ups, you know, if you need a guy, he can come up, you know, just it's an hour drive as opposed to Utica. He's got to fly, got to catch 2 flights. So, I mean, this was something probably overdue, but, you know, we were on the contract with Utica, so we couldn't move until this last year.
What back roads are you taking that you get to Abbotsford in an hour? That's
yeah, it's at midnight.
Yeah. The traffic usually doesn't allow for it.
I know. It depends when you go.
Yeah, right? 100%. Just to follow up on expectations. So you talked about early on, it's been a process, and you want to build it right. You don't want to cut corners with this team, and that's been the plan with Jim all along. But when you look at expectations, you mentioned playoffs, it would be a disappointment not to get there. Do you see, you know, expectations being not just playoffs, but is there a build towards getting back to the Stanley Cup, you know, where we're a consistent playoff team and then we're working towards that? You know, playoffs, it seems like a bar that doesn't carry all the context, because sometimes you can get into the playoffs but maybe not look like a true Stanley Cup contender.
Yeah, and we've seen that in the past. But, you know, I think, you know, when we say playoffs, it's the first step. And obviously, you know, you want to win the Stanley Cup. I mean, that's always the goal. But the first step is to get into the playoffs. And, you know, with this group, they're young players. You know, our core guys are young, and they've had a little bit of experience in the bubble. And, you know, they see how hard it is in the playoffs. And the one thing about in the salary cap era, you know, I mean, once you're in the playoffs, you know, anything can happen. Like we saw with the Canadians last year, like nobody expected the Canadians to go to the finals. It was kind of an anomaly. But, you know, so many things can kind of happen. And just like when we were in the bubble, like nobody expected us to, you know, to go one game within the Western Conference final. You know, and Besser puts that shot in, you know, like, you know, Vegas panics and we could win the game, right? It's just like, you know, who knows? Anything can happen. And so, you know, right now for our group, right, it's like the focus is, you know, the next 82 games.
Yeah.
Right? Focusing on and learning from every game what it takes, the hard work, the dedication, the commitment, right, to being the best player you can be. It's like it's the next 82 games. Like, that's what they have to think about. This group right now, you know, we've got a whole bunch of new players and our guys are developing and, you know, and Jim and Travis and everybody together. Like, they got to focus right now what's in front of them. Like, to start thinking the Stanley Cup right now, that's in April, right?
Yeah.
Like, what are we going to do between now and April? And what are we going to learn and how are we going to build? And, you know, what are we going to do for each other?
Right. It's Francesco Aquilini. I got to say, next time we have you in studio, we probably have to get some dud soda ready.
Absolutely. We'll have the glasses ready and the cream soda and everything.
That's right, yeah.
I'll bring the espresso and maybe some biscotti as well. Okay. And we'll have a time.
And Sat will bring something too.
Okay. Yeah. I usually come empty-handed. But, yeah.
You bring some wine.
Yeah. There we go. Yes, right. I do like my wine.
All right. all three work. Francesco, it's been really exciting seeing this team come together, and we'll see how it fares this season. Thank you for coming in studio today.
Fantastic. Thank you. Thank you for asking me to come.
Right. There is Francesco Aquilini, the Canucks owner and chairman of Canucks Sport and Entertainment. It is the People's Show, and we get you ready for the Canucks and Oilers next on Sportsnet 650.
Getting you set for all the action. It's Vancouver Canucks Game Day on the official home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650 and the Sportsnet Radio Network. Here's Dan Riccio, Satyar Shah, and Randeep Chanda.
Yes, the Canucks pregame show, the Canucks and Oilers in the season opener coming up at 7 o'clock here on Sportsnet 650. It's Dan Riccio, Satyar Shah, and Randeep Janda as we now react to the conversation we just had with the chairman of Canucks Sports and Entertainment, Francesco Aquilini. It was, it was a good conversation. And obviously, coming off of last year, there's not a lot of easy things to talk about for the owner.
Mm.
But one takeaway that I would have is it clearly left a mark how bad things went. And you see that from the moves they made this offseason, but even hearing it from Francesco himself. And he didn't hide from the fact that the pandemic changed a lot of how they operate. And he didn't make the connection, but I think we all know it played a factor into how the team played on the ice last year.
You know, it was interesting because one of the things we talked about last year was ambition, right? And, we always have to allow for the fact it's a pandemic. Everybody's going through an economic crisis. It makes life difficult. Everybody has to make hard choices. And we have to accept that to some degree as, the part of doing business, right? But the question that a lot of people had about last year was how much of the failure to get stuff done was on Jim and how much was on the entire organization. And Francesco took responsibility and we talked, and we asked specifically. So, are you putting last year's failure of the team on yourself too then? Because you're saying, and he used the word diss. He said, don't diss Jim, diss me.
If there's anybody to diss, diss me.
So we asked him, so do you take responsibility? Is that the reason you're taking responsibility for what happened last year? And he said yes. He's like, ultimately, I don't play, but he did take responsibility for the failure last year. And we all know where that failure kind of began. It was how the plan came together. Financially, there were a lot of difficulties and decisions to be made. So it was interesting to hear him take responsibility for that, to say that, a big part of last year's failure was on him.
A key question that, even before, and Sat, you brought this up, was, why the faith in Jim Benning, right? Two playoff appearances, quite a few years in power, obviously, but you haven't had the result yet. And his answer was, Jim has a vision how to build this team. I want him to follow through on that. You might not like the answer, and I'm sure there's a lot of Canucks fans that don't like it because they're saying, hey, 8 years is enough, and you haven't delivered the results. But that's the owner's mentality, essentially saying these things take time, you can't cut corners. And, I have my own disagreements with certain things, but this is the guy that employs Jim Benning. This is the guy that pays Jim Benning. This is the one that believes in the plan that he has. That's the opinion. So one of the questions we wanted to ask was, despite the playoff success, why do you have faith in him? He answered it. Now, it's up to you if you want to agree with that or not. You can hit us up on the Dunbar Lumber text line, 650-650.
It is interesting about that because it's essentially a fact now that the Canucks have been patient to almost an extreme level with this management group, right? You don't see many general managers around the league survive this long when there isn't considerable amount of success. Mm-hmm. Now, look, we look back at the bubble, and yes, you can look at the Brock Besser glove save by Robin Leonard in Game 7 against Vegas and say, we were that close to getting to the third round. At the same time, we all knew that as close as that series ended up being on paper, Game 7, tight game, Vegas was skating circles around the Canucks for much of it, right? Can't deny that. So, this is always going to be it. And he was upfront about wanting to build a sustainable contender, but also knowing that, look, in the NHL, we've seen teams sneak into the playoffs and make runs. The Montreal Canadiens are the example of that. And, you know, that's always the great question in the NHL. Is it just about getting in? But as we know with this team 10 years ago, they were knocking on the door for a few years before making the eventual run to the Stanley Cup final. And they were undoubtedly a juggernaut, right? It's a very different contrast from where this team is right now.
And, Randeep asked the question about, 10 years ago, you were the most cutting edge NHL organization. And he talked about what the things that worked from that and the things that didn't work. And the obvious things being the sleep doctor stuff and the nutrition stuff and all the things that they kind of worked on. And then, we pressed on, is the ambition the same? Is you mentioned, you still want to win, but is your ambition the same as it was back in 2011 when this team was, like Dan just mentioned, year in and year out contender? Not just getting into the playoffs, but year in, year out contender.
Yeah, and that's where, in the end, whether it's this year or beyond, because as you mentioned, Dan, at the top of the interview, Francesco Accolini has been the majority owner of this team for the last 15 years. And he mentions that winning the Stanley Cup is the aim, but how do you build a sustainable organization on the ice? That's something that in the last 10 years, back and forth, there's been a lot of stop start. There's been in reverse. This organization, this management group, and eventually the ownership will be, judged on that. Can you bring back? And I think that's what most fans, correct me if I'm wrong, but that's the most important thing, is that rather than having that one chance to just win it all and having that, flash in the pan moment, how can you make it a healthy franchise long term? So all these mistakes that have been made in the last 4 or 5 years, and there's a fair bit of them, there's a fair number of them, how do you try to eliminate some of those, and how do you bring this to be a steady ship on the seas rather than like feeling like every move could have earth-shattering consequences for the organization? Because that's what it felt like last year, that's what it felt like the last couple of years. That organization we talked about 10 years ago, that was a steamliner, boys. Like, it was tough to knock it off course. The Canucks over the last 2 years hasn't been that. We'll eventually see if Jim Benning's plan and Francesco Accolini's plan in the longer term works. But, that was the reaction. That was the answer he gave. It's up to you to judge if you like the answer or not. But that was the conversation we had.
A lot of reaction coming in on the Dunbar Lumber text line. What did you think of the owner's thoughts here on Sportsnet 650? If you missed it, I know a couple of people have texted in that they did. It'll be up at sportsnet.ca/650 and on podcast as well for you to grab. So you'll be able to find it if you miss the interview in its entirety. And yeah, Francesco backed the general manager.
Oh, yes. Numerous times.
Numerous
passionately,
times.
Passionately, I'd say.
In a big way. And I don't know. What do you want me to say? He should fire him? he's the owner of this team. He's believing in what Jim is selling right now. You may not agree with that. I don't always agree with that, as we've discussed on the show numerous times. But it does feel like this is, and I know we always have this conversation, but hearing him say not making the playoffs would be a disappointment, knowing that it's been a long time that they've been patient with this management group as to steering this ship in the right direction, it does feel like this year the hot seat will be quite hot if the Canucks don't have success on the ice.
Well, I mean, he said he'd be very, very disappointed.
Yeah.
If they missed the playoffs, right? Now, he did defend Jim quite a bit. And here's the thing. We've talked about this a lot. That we talk about Jim and expectations every year and pressures on, yet he's still here every year, right? We're going to year 8 and Jim is still here. So we'll see ultimately what happens after the season. Because he did really come to Jim's defense, right? Like, we asked about the banner, And he called that low class, right? He called that, like, he really had strong words for the fans that flew the banner, right? So, you know, for somebody that, yes, Jim, I would imagine is on the hot seat to some degree, right, this year?
And, like, you don't need Francesco Aquilini to say that to know.
Right. But even so, there was a pretty strong defense of him. Like, you know, to call out a segment of the fan base and call them out the way he did shows that he is defending his GM pretty strongly.
I think there's a clear line of job performance versus personal shots. Because, you know, there were some personal shots over the last couple of years when it comes to Jim Benning, right? And, you know, whether it's on, you know, Twitter, media, whatever. Whatever it may be. So it felt like, you know, Aquilini, because you're right, Sat. Performance is going to dictate how long this relationship goes on for. Mm-hmm. That's the case with every general manager, every head coach, and heck, as Zach MacEwen showed today, every player in this league. But there was, I think, in that conversation, and when I asked him about the banner, you could tell, yeah, he was very strong on that, essentially saying there's no room for anything like that. That's, right. To your point, classless was the word that was used. So it feels like you don't need the owner to necessarily say, hey, this guy, if we don't deliver, it's just going to happen. Like, we've all been saying that for the last little bit now. When you load up and you commit money, and whenever Jim Benning, when he stood up to that press conference at the end of the year and said, I've got the green light from ownership to be aggressive, that implies go time.
Yeah.
And if you don't deliver, we can all come to our own conclusions, right? I don't necessarily need to hear that from the owner, as some are saying, you know, on the text line or on Twitter saying, hey, you know, that wasn't communicated. That doesn't matter. I don't think that needs to be communicated. That's the name of the game.
Yeah. And again, going back to, you know, the differences from last year, he was open and honest about how the pandemic changed the way that the Canucks operated. Didn't go into ultra detail on what that meant, but you can kind of read between the lines, if you will. It is, you know, remarkable how... you know, we think about this team and we think of all it's been through over the 8 years under Jim Benning, and we look at another season beginning tonight. Elias Pettersson, Quinn Hughes leading this franchise, the two franchise cornerstones. This is in the Benning era, you know, for as much as Benning has taken heat, and there's a lot of question marks about the method to get to this point. And also, you know, 8 years in, this is the best team you've put on the ice. You know, that raises a few question marks too, but it's hard to deny that as this season begins tonight, this is the best team, at least on paper for me, that the Canucks have put on the ice since Jim Benning became general manager of the team.
And, you know, that's why they have to deliver this year, right? Yeah. I mean, that's what we've talked about as far as evaluating this team. You got to deliver, right? And you know what? We can sit here and talk about Francesco Aquilini, Jim Benning, and all that sort of stuff. But if you want the fan base to really buy in, you got to have success. You got to win games. And they haven't won enough games over the past 7 years. And part of that is the rebuild. And I see people texting in about the shortcuts, right? And, you know, Arpon texts in from Abbotsford and says, the lasting quote for me was the interview was not taking shortcuts as a justification for Benning. All they've done over the past 8 years is try to take a shortcut. That sentiment, that text, we got from a lot of people texting in when Francesco mentioned not taking shortcuts. And I think when you look at what happened early on and how they got to this point, you do see two different trends, right, that have changed. But have they ever really gone full-on rebuild? Not really, right? No. So, you know, that's
they've
one
not
of the things.
Done what Buffalo and Arizona are doing.
No,
right now.
So the point that I want to bring here is, based on all that, you're heading into year eight, it's about results now, right? Yeah. Like, we can sit here and talk about rebuilds all we want, get your draft picks or whatever, but the capital's been spent. Yeah. Like, the capital's been spent, man. You guys spent the last 6-7 years getting to this point. We can talk about the rebuild, whether they took shortcuts or not, or should have taken more assets or not. This is the lot they have. This is what they have to work with. And however you cut it or dice it, you got to find a way to ascend. And you can't be stuck in this, you know, mushy middle like they have been. They've been below the mushy middle or been in the mushy middle. It's about becoming a good hockey team now, right? And this year, beyond just the organization, from the fan base and the market, you got to have success to get everybody to buy in again, at least to a higher degree.
Yeah, the word rebuild, we can look back in history and say, okay, the first 18 months on the job, what was it like? But rebuild should not be uttered for this regime anymore, because it's not going to be their responsibility. At some point, whenever this is, another GM is probably going to be tackling any sort of rebuild that the Canucks have. That's the reality of the situation. When you're in year eight, whenever another GM takes, you know, control of the team, whether it's, you know, 5 years from now, 10 years, I don't care what the number is, that's probably a you know, it's a different person. So I don't necessarily think talking about that now really makes sense, because the Canucks are not in that position to be, you know, that rebuilding team. But you heard Francesco Aquilini numerous times reference the bubble. Like, he wants this team, he thinks this team can be like that team. And a part of that is going back to the excitement in the fan base, because we've talked a lot about Zach MacEwen. I'll be honest, I've talked a lot about the right side of defense. There are some things to look forward to as well from this team tonight.
Yeah.
Jack Rathbone is going to be playing. You've got, you know, Quinn Hughes returning, Elias Pettersson returning. You've got debuts of OEL and Connor Garland. So there's reasons to be optimistic. But part of the reason, you know, you look back at that bubble team, it was success. But what do we remember about that? Zach, you were doing post-game shows till 4 a.m. in the morning.
Yes.
When there's an element of success in this market.
And they're starving for it in this market.
Exactly. But when that happens, guess what? The word rebuild doesn't come up very often, right? During that stretch in the bubble.
Anyone wins.
Yeah. So I think winning is going to, you know, whether you like Jim Benning or you don't like Jim Benning, because that's where we know in this market, it's the Montagues and Capulets, as I say, right? You're on one side or the other.
Yeah.
But what shuts up everybody? Winning.
Yeah.
So if this team does that, that division might just kind of go away for a while, but that's on the players to change that conversation.
You know, when you lose, there are problems, but the reality is when you win, it masks everything. When you lose, it creates problems that don't exist.
Yep. It puts a microscope on every little thing that may be going awry in the franchise. And you see it all over the league. Trust me. Look at the Buffalo Sabres, okay? And how things have gone with all of the losing and everything that's gone on there. You know, things have to be better. And the team is better. The team on paper is better. As this texter says, they would be a better team with Hamonic, Mott, and Besser. I'd throw Sutter into that conversation, too. Obviously, you're starting the season at less than full strength. Because of that, Besser should be back in the short term, maybe as early as Friday. Tyler Mott, same thing. Maybe not Friday, but he may join the team on the road trip at some point. What was interesting, too, is if you're looking at going to Rogers Arena, Francesco did mention that capacity may increase to 100% by the time the Canucks return home. Is it October 26th, their first home game?
Yep, against Minnesota.
Against Minnesota. Tuesday, October 26th. So you may be able to see or have the Canucks at full capacity at Rogers Arena by then. As of right now, everything is still 50% here in BC.
Yeah, and hopefully we get to that point.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think we all want to see it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it'd just be nice. You know, I'm seeing this Canada crowd looks rambunctious over here on Sportsnet 1, but I want to see that at Rogers Arena.
I love this text here. This is opening day talk. Holy bleep. Your tone sucks. We were talking about some, hey, we just had an interview with the owner of the team.
Yeah.
There's some stuff that we had, the serious discussions. Now, yeah, we're focusing on opening day because as I mentioned, like 2 minutes ago,
it's opening day.
Reasons to be optimistic, guys. There's a debut for Connor Garland. And if you've been talking about it, and I know I've seen the chatter online, I've heard it on the airwaves. Yeah, Connor Garland hasn't looked all that great. Connor Garland in the preseason, don't see the fit, maybe, some are saying.
Yeah.
You're going to see the real Connor Garland tonight. His 100 miles per hour speed is intense. If you play like that in the preseason, you're probably going to get punched in the face.
Yeah.
Like, he's not a guy that I think, you know, you can really get a sense of what he's about in the preseason. Come regular season, that's the one player I'm watching to say, all right, we're going to see him ramp up his speed and his intensity immediately.
So who's a Canucks X factor for you then?
Not even on the roster. Travis Hamonic.
You know what? That is the ultimate X factor.
It is.
It is the ultimate X factor.
The right side of defense. If he comes back, and we talked to Jim Benning yesterday, right?
Yeah.
Saying, hey, yeah, they're obviously hopeful and that he comes back at some point this year. But guys, I'm not a Travis Hamonic stan. Even last year I said, hey, if you can upgrade on him, you do it. You don't explore circle back season with Travis Hamonic. Obviously, they couldn't do that on the right-hand side. That's a pretty key player. They're missing a player like him, like a Pullman on that right-hand side. So for me, he's the X factor. If they get him back at some point, all of a sudden, that defense looks a lot better.
Yeah, I mean, I get that's a great X factor because he's not here. If he's here, it changes the dynamics of the back end. To me, the most important player for the Canucks this season, without a doubt, is Oliver Ekman-Larsson.
Yeah.
And that's not to say he's the MVP, but to me, the success of this team hinges so much on him. Because if he's legitimately a guy who can carry a D pair and win his matchup and not be a Norris candidate, right? But legitimately be a higher end defenseman, be closer to what he was a few years ago before the struggles really got a hold of him in Arizona, it changes the dynamic on the back end. Because what do we talk about on the back end? It's thin. Randy, Hamonic's X factor. It makes a lot of sense. I think Quinn Hughes is bouncing back. I actually have confidence in OEL having a good season. But if he's actually capital G good,
yeah,
it changes everything for this team. Because I know what to expect from Pettersson. I know what to expect from Horvat and Besser and Hughes and all those other guys. If OEL comes in and plays at that level, the back end is not going to be a problem. It's not. Because if you have Hughes and whoever he's playing with winning their matchups or being consistent in their matchups, and you have OEL winning his matchup, I can live with the third pair, whatever it does.
Yeah.
It's the biggest impact on this team if OEL is really a good player for them.
You're so right about that, Sat, just because, you know, okay, so you have Hughes, Pullman. I think they'll be fine. If OEL and Myers play well together and are a solid second pair.
It's a big if, Dan.
Of course.
Huge if.
But that's why it's an X factor.
Yep.
Then it, you know, I know we got a lot of texts today being like, Jack Rathbone, Kyle Burrows, like, that's your third pair? I don't know about that. We have questions about Luke Shen and how he's played in the preseason. Of course, major question marks. But if you're looking at those four top four defensemen and they are okay, and a lot of that will do with can Hughes and OEL drive those pairings and lead them towards success, put them on offense more than they are stuck in their own end where Tyler Myers gets himself into a lot of trouble at times. That can be the difference maker because all of a sudden you're playing Jack Rathbone and Kyle Burrows or whoever else is on that right side 12 to 14 minutes a night in sheltered minutes. And I have confidence that Jack Rathbone will be able to at least hold water, you know, in that sort of a role.
Yeah. The time on ice is key there. If you're playing 10 to 12 minutes, you're not worried about that. Even Kyle Burrows, who's a 26-year-old who hasn't, you know, he's played five games in the NHL as a 26-year-old, right? He hasn't had that much exposure outside of 1 year with the Colorado Avalanche. Yeah.
But there was no doubt who was better in preseason, Kyle Burrows or
no, Luke Shen struggled too, and that's the point. I know Luke Shen was saying all the right things of, hey, yeah, I'd love to play every single night, but on a good defensive team, that's probably not happening. Mm-hmm. You want him to be that depth piece. So all of a sudden, if OEL's pairing and Hughes' pairing is Eden probably 48 to 50 minutes a night, guys, and they're healthy and they're good to go. Yeah, you need that. You need that. So OEL is going to, you know, show us what he's about, but maybe the ceiling of this team as well. Big player.
We will dive more into the Canucks coming up as Brendan Batchelor and Corey Hirsch will join us for the pregame. It is the Canucks and Oilers coming up at 7 o'clock right here on Sportsnet 650.